Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Friday,
yay, February 7, 10 after 5, welcome to the show. I've been here a month, and you know, this is a relatively new studio setup for WGN. They just moved here not too long ago, so I'm still walking around exploring different rooms and hallways, and I noticed down towards the WGN lounge, one of the lounges, one of the waiting rooms, the green room where guests sit, they have pictures, historic photos, WGN radio through the years. And I notice there are all sorts of scenes from the 30s and the 1940s. And other than one picture that has Jack Brickhouse emceeing something, and another one from, I think, 1959 with WGN flying officer Len Baldy, who was in the traffic copter back then. Everything is from too far back. Shouldn't they have some pictures of maybe the people, the people who are on the radio now, or the people who are on the radio here 10 years ago, 20 years ago? You know what I mean?
You know what? We have never had, like, a lot of radio stations. I'm sure most of the places you've worked, Bob, have, like, a photo wall of all the current on-air staff. Mm-hmm. We've never had that at WGN.
You know, they should
take
really
our pictures all the time.
Yeah, we do have a lot of pictures taken.
They should do that, because that way, you know, when you come in, that's how you find out you're terminated, when your photo is taken off the wall.
When they hand you it, here, you could take this and
if that's
the rest
the case,
of your things.
Maybe let's not do it.
Yeah, maybe we don't want
to. I remember years ago when I was a kid working at NBC as a page, they had a bowling league, and the various TV and radio people at the time, NBC television and radio, both in the merchandise mart. And so they had a bowling league, and the people who were on the air, on radio and on TV, the names of the bowling teams were like, you know, the Volkmans, the Calbers, and so forth and so on. And so if your team was scrubbed, if there was a big X through your team on the bowling league schedule, you knew that there was trouble. So, you know, just saying.
A Life of Suras, brought out of the shadows, how Darren Labonte went from policing suburban streets to hunting terrorists for the CIA. WGN-TV investigates Monday at 9.
Would you like me to do those announcements? If you're out of the room, I'd be happy to. I can do that.
Oh, I have the internal clock going. I knew exactly
you were back
when
just
I had to
in
be
time.
Back in here.
Yes. I know. They were panicking. They gave me the announcement, but I don't want you to feel that I won't do that for you, if you like.
Well, I appreciate that, Bob.
I'm ready.
We're a team.
Yes, we are. 5:18, and we'll have a prize for the first caller on the radio later. Could be any minute. 312-981-7200 for that. Right now, let's say good morning to WGN-TV's Nancy Liu. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning, Bob. I'm in Rogers Park this morning.
Oh, I know what's going on there. As a matter of fact, I was just looking at this small craft advisory in effect on Lake Michigan until 3. Winds up to 30 miles an hour with waves occasionally 8 feet, and this is causing a lot of trouble, isn't it?
Oh, boy. And, you know, our lakefront is so beat up. We had those big storms in January, and it is so bad that, you know, Rogers Park, Howard Park, they're still closed, because the water level is so high and there's so much erosion, and it is so bad that the mayor, Lightfoot, and the governor have declared disasters. And there's going to be a big announcement later today, and they're going to talk more about the response. But the declarations will allow the city to free up some emergency money so we can treat the lakefront that we're losing. I mean, it is literally, you know, beaten up from these storms. And also the state declaration will allow for communities to apply for federal aid. But I, you know, a lot of people may not be aware of how bad this problem is. Our lake level is so high, it's the highest it's been in decades. And that is causing significant problems whenever we have storms, because these waves, they batter it even more. And we're having flooding. You know, that during that storm last month, there were cars in garages that were flooded out. It's crazy. It's just the lake level has been so high. And I'm sure people have seen the pictures of the lakefront trail, of the concrete all beat up and battered and torn from this storm. Mm-hmm. So it is a significant problem, and it will be addressed.
Anybody who likes to run or bike along the lakefront, and many people, not so much the biking, but many people run all year round, they've noticed that. And I know a lot of the residents around, I think, Wellington refer to a lake Wellington, which is not supposed to be a lake, is it?
No, not at all. And because our lake level is so high, you know, we are losing pieces of the lakefront trail because it's covered by water. And, you know, people know that in recent years, whenever we've had storms, there's a higher likelihood of flooding on Lakeshore, on Sheridan, on South Shore, and we've had closures because of flooding. So this is a significant problem, and it needs a major fix. And, you know, who knows if the lake level is ever going to go down again? I mean, is this a permanent high lake level? You know, these are long-term issues that need to be addressed.
So this will probably be a big story on the news tonight. Do we know exactly what the mayor is going to say today, Nancy?
She's going to be joined by Senator Durbin, as well as our Lieutenant Governor Stratton, and they're going to further detail, you know, how these declarations are going to help. And, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers is in on it to find these permanent solutions of how do we prevent further erosion, and how do we deal with this high lake level that's already causing, you know, major problems.
There you have it from Nancy Liu, WGN-TV News. Thank you, Nancy. You have a good weekend.
You do the same.
Happy Friday. And hi to Teresa in Oak Park, and you are the first caller on our show, so you get a prize. Congratulations. How you doing, Teresa?
Thank you. Fine.
What are you doing?
I used to listen to you on WLS all the time.
You were the one. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. What are you doing up at 522?
Just up.
Just up. Mm-hmm. And any big weekend plans?
Not so far.
Well, it's early yet, isn't it? How about some tickets to Noises Off, hailed as the funniest farce ever? And it's a boisterous play within a play. Teresa, catch this comedy favorite at Metropolis Performing Arts Center now, playing through March 14th. You can get your tickets at metropolisarts.com. But, Teresa, you will get your tickets free from us.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. Hold on. We'll get all the information we need, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for being just up. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Teresa is underwhelmed, but, you know, that's what happens when you're half asleep.
It's early.
Hey, some people do a radio show half asleep. I'm headed down to Champaign today, Dave. I'm going to go to the basketball game.
Are you going tonight?
Yeah. Uh-huh. My daughter is very excited about the game, and so Mrs. Surratt and I will be going down there, and it should be a good game. Illinois has been doing well.
Should be a great game, and it's kind of a payback game for Illinois, because if you remember, back in December, in the Big Ten opener at Maryland, they had a big lead on Maryland, and it came down to the last couple of seconds of that game, and the Terrapins pulled it out. But right now, they're tied for first in the Big Ten. Maryland's ranked 9th. Illinois is ranked 20th. And it's probably, Bob, it's as big a game as Illinois has played in, I don't know, the last probably 15 years or so.
Yeah,
so,
that's what I hear.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
Yeah,
you got seats? You got tickets?
According to my daughter, we do.
Yeah, you in the middle of the Orange Crush?
You know what? She works for the basketball team. They have they have a video squad,
They don't really call them a squad.
Well, I don't know what they call them, but she's down there helping the video folks who work with the basketball coaches.
Right.
So hopefully she's got an in.
I'm sure she does.
Just don't call it the audio visual crew.
AV squad. AV club. She's and she also works on the training training squad for the football team down there. She helps those folks out. She got the ball gene from me, so she's kind of a sports nut.
Is she covering softball?
Not yet. I tried to sort of say, you know, you're so passionate about sports and you know so much about sports. Why don't you get paid for talking about it and go on the campus radio station or do some television?
WPGU. But
that's right.
Mm-hmm.
The Big P.
Yeah.
I don't think they call it that, do they?
We called it Pigou when we were there.
Well, but she's not interested in any of that.
No.
And maybe that's a good thing.
She should talk to Judd.
That's right. She has. Oh. She has. But I think she sort of is aiming more towards marketing or management. And
she's smart. She's a smart girl. Send her that way.
She's better off. Yeah. Stay away from the microphones and the cameras.
Yeah.
It's 5:26. Let's see. What else did I want to comment on early here this morning? I've got a little special treat for you. If you've been a longtime WGN listener, you're going to like what we do here at about 5:48 this morning. About 5:48 this morning. And if you can't be with us, then make a note to get the podcast later. A little after 9, what they do is put the whole show on WGNradio.com so you can listen to everything at that time. I suppose I should tell the producers what I have planned for 5:48 at some point, shouldn't I? Yeah, I'll come in the control room in a minute.
So this is a surprise?
It's a surprise. Well, it's not something that we had planned, yesterday or last night or early this morning. I just recently thought of it. So it'll be a very nice moment. Trust me on that. Let me remind you, if you want to get in touch with us, several ways to do that. The phone number and the text number is the same here. It's 312-981-7200. We have email set up now, bobshow@wgnradio.com. Looking at the text here, I really appreciate the fact that you help me so much. I know the whole idea here is we help you get through the morning, but we get messages like this, a text from 317. Please let Bob know Sunday night's Hawks game is on NBC Sports Chicago Plus. That is where he struggles to find the right channel. Okay, duly noted. I'm going to have a good weekend now. Here's the quick 5:38 agribusiness update from Orion.
Good morning. Well, it was quite a day for livestock futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday. Lean hog futures climbed their daily $3 per hundredweight limit after comments from a Tyson Foods executive about pork demand from China ignited a wave of buying, including some short covering. Tyson is competing with other global companies to supply meat to China, the world's largest pork consumer, because of the outbreak of African swine fever. And April lean hog futures up the $3 limit, and the rest of the contracts also up the $3 limit. And Dan Norsini, an independent livestock trader, said the Tyson news of a 600% increase in first quarter pork sales to China had everyone foaming at the mouth. So at the end of the day, we saw all of the lean hog contracts trading up the $3 $50 limit, and the April live cattle contract up 55 cents a hundredweight. The April feeder cattle contract up 57 cents a hundredweight in yesterday's trade. Quite a day in the pork industry. As far as the grain market, corn and wheat slid on a strong dollar and the uncertainty of exports. At the end of the trading day, March wheat was down 5¾ cents, March corn down 0.5 cent, and March soybeans up 3 cents a bushel in the trade. Well, today is opening day of World Ag Expo. It'll attract about 100,000 people to Tulare, California, in a very large and unusual kind of outdoor farm equipment show. Have a great day. That's Ag Biz. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, thanks to Orion. It is 5:40. I bet we'll be a little sleepy Monday morning because Sunday night is Oscar night and the Academy Awards, actually 7 p.m. Central Time for the start. But I think the red carpet starts at about 4:30 on ABC. Tom Hanks, Chris Rock, among the presenters who will take the stage. Other names in the overall lineup include Jane Fonda, Will Ferrell, Spike Lee, Sigourney Weaver. No host. Again, they're doing that. We'll talk more when we get our entertainment report from Dean Richards between 8 and 8:30. Right here.
Still going to move really slow, probably.
Well, just like the traffic, right, Mary?
Yeah.
You know what, though? Every year, I say this, and every year you hear about how the producers promise to streamline it, make it move quicker, have the Academy Awards shorter, but I say that's not why we watch. We want the drunken, rambling, embarrassing speeches. So if I produced the show, I would demand that there be no time limits on speeches. Everybody could take as long as they want, wouldn't be playing off anybody like they do, because then you're more likely to have a star make a fool of himself or herself, and I think the ratings would go up.
A little more entertaining.
Yeah. You know, absolutely.
Although I have to say, when Billy Crystal used to host it, and there are some hosts I can remember, it was actually a pleasure to watch and listen, because they were genuinely funny, I thought. There were always jokes and little skits and stuff, but they don't do any of that anymore.
Yeah, the musical numbers at the beginning, he was awesome at those.
Remember, yeah, he did.
Song and
he
dance.
He put himself in all the movies.
Yeah, those were funny.
So you remember when Carson used to host? Well, of course, for years it was Bob Hope, then Johnny Carson, and they tried. They had a disastrous year. It wasn't as disastrous as he made it out to be when David Letterman did it. He always joked about that himself, but he just sort of was not matched up very well with that Hollywood establishment crowd at the time. He was ahead of his time. A sad anniversary tomorrow, February 8, 2000. That's when we lost Bob Collins in that plane crash. And I'm sure you remember Uncle Bobby. And if you don't, if you weren't around here, he succeeded the legendary Wally Phillips in the summer of 1986 and was the host in this time period until his death in 2000. And strangely, his last show on February 8th, of 2000 included a reading of a sort of life message that we all need to pay attention to, and I thought we'd replay that this morning. This is from Bob Collins' last show on WGN. It was the day he died, February 8th of 2000.
Things I have learned as I aged. Age 6. I've learned that I like my teacher because she cries when we sing Silent Night. Age 7, I've learned that you can't hide a piece of broccoli in a glass of milk. Age 9, I've learned that when I wave to people in the country, they stop what they're doing and wave back. Age 13, I've learned that just when I get my room the way I want it, Mom makes me clean it up. Age 14, I've learned that if you want to cheer yourself up, you should try cheering somebody else up. Age 15, I've learned that although it's hard to admit, I secretly am glad my parents are strict with me. Age 24, I've learned that silent company is often more healing than words or advice. Age 26, I've learned that brushing my child's hair is one of life's great pleasures. Age 29, I've learned that wherever I go, the world's worst drivers follow me there. Age 39, I've learned that if somebody says something unkind about me, I must live so that no one will believe it. Age 41, I've learned that there are people who love you dearly but just don't know how to say it. Age 44, I've learned that you can make somebody's day simply by sending them a little card. Age 46, I've learned that the greater a person's sense of guilt, the greater his need to cast blame on others. Age 47, I've learned that children and grandparents are natural allies. Age 49, I've learned that singing Amazing Grace can lift my spirit for hours. Age 50, I've learned that the motel mattresses are better on the side away from the phone. Age 51, I've learned that you can tell a lot about a man by the way he handles these three things: a rainy day, lost luggage, and tangled Christmas tree lights. Age 52, I've learned that keeping a vegetable garden is worth a whole medicine cabinet full of pills. Age 53, I've learned that regardless of your relationship with your parents, you miss them terribly after they die. Age 58, I've learned that making a living is not the same thing as making a life. Age 61, I've learned that if you want to do something positive for your children, try improving your marriage. Age 62, I've learned that life sometimes gives you a second chance. Age 64, I've learned that if you pursue happiness, it will elude you. But if you focus on your family, the needs of others, your work, and meeting new people, and doing the very best you can, happiness will in fact find you. Age 66, I've learned that whenever I decide something with kindness, I almost always make the right decision. Age 72, I've learned that everybody can use a prayer. Age 73, I've learned to believe in miracles. And to tell you the truth, I've seen a few. Age 82, I've learned that even if I have pains, I don't have to be one. Age 85, I've learned that every day you should reach out and touch someone. People love the human touch. Holding hands, a warm hug, or a friendly pat on the back, it's all wonderful. At age 92, I've learned that I still have a lot to learn.
Bob Collins on what turned out to be his last broadcast on this station 20 years ago tomorrow. Why he read that, what he was thinking, what was going on, we will never know. Now, did you guys marry? Were you working with him that morning?
Both Dave and I were, yes.
Yeah, and I remember him saying to Orion, and Orion would certainly verify this, it was a really beautiful sunny day.
Yeah, blue skies, it was a gorgeous day.
And he said, well, this seems like a good day to go out and fly an airplane, you know, because that's what he would do on nice days. Mm-hmm. And he invited Orion to go with him, and Orion had something else going that day, I remember. And that was, you know, and then about 3 o'clock, 3:30 that afternoon, we started to kind of get the word. And I'll never forget. I can't believe it's been 20 years.
I remember listening to Spike Odell that afternoon when finally it was confirmed. And I still remember Spike's words, "We lost Uncle Bobby."
Well, and the amazing thing about what Spike did that day, Bob, is that Spike, we knew that it had been Bob, but for several hours, he was on the air and not saying that. We knew there had been, everyone knew, everyone was covering the plane crash in Waukegan, but no one could say that it was Bob, or no one here would say it was Bob, because I think at that point they weren't sure Christine knew, and there were, what Spike did that day was unbelievable.
Even what he did the next morning.
And the next morning.
That was so hard. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was, it was a sad time. And if I recall, wasn't the funeral on television? Maybe it was on Channel 9.
I think it was.
Because it was
Over huge. Holy Name.
Yeah. And Marianne and I were doing Fox Thing in the Morning at the time, and that was the major story here for days.
It was packed. It was just packed in there.
Yeah. So do you remember when Bob was doing that reading on the show? Did anybody say, what's this? Why are you doing this? What's going on?
I do remember it, but I don't remember anybody reading anything into it. Mm-hmm. It was just one of the... I mean, he would take things like that, right, Mara? And just sort of...
And I think he had done that one before.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, he did.
I think it was, he just brought it up again, and I don't know why, if it was around Valentine's Day or if it had something to do with that or what. Yeah, he just did these things sporadically, these really interesting, caring mm-hmm. reads, and just the way he spoke, it just kind of made you cry just listening to him.
If Bob were here, he would say, hey, I was just filling time.
Right. He could just as easily have been playing Dead Skunk in the middle of the
night. Oh, yeah. Next hour he'd play that, and we'd, brother, he's
back. Well, I think the great thing about him was he could go from Dead Skunk to a very serious interview, and he just did it all, didn't he?
He did.
That was a great talent that he had, to go from laughs to just about any news topic, any serious news topic. All right. Well, a sad anniversary, as I said, and I wanted to just acknowledge that and play that clip, which I hadn't heard in a long time. Heard it years ago.
Well, his birthday comes up later in the month, and we have always had the traditional toast to Bob on his birthday. So I trust that we will continue that tradition now.
With Orion, right?
With Orion, yes.
Yeah, I know the two of them talked about retiring together.
Arizona. Yeah.
Sitting on the front porch together. Yeah, they were very close, mm-hmm. I know. I would run into him now and then. I remember every year at the Malnati's cancer fundraiser, mm-hmm. Bob was always there.
Oh, yeah.
And I've told this story before. We would occasionally on Fox Thing in the Morning pick a radio personality and have coffee with them. I have send the camera out and chat with them and do like a simulcast. The radio person would be doing his or her show, and we'd have them on television at the same time. And of course, we wanted to get Bob on, number one rated show, and we never could get him to do it because he wasn't, and I understand, he wasn't crazy about bringing the television crew into the radio studio. And I remember he called me and he said, look, it's not you, it's nothing personal. But then finally management actually made him do it.
Well, he used to do the Channel 9 would do a preview of the auto show,
right?
And he would host that, and he would complain's the right word, but he hated doing television.
Yeah, I know.
But they got him to do it.
Yeah, he'd do it kicking and screaming. It's 5:56. Let's get the market outlook from Steve Grzanich. Steve?
Bob, sponsored by Associated Bank, the big thing on the report today is the monthly jobs report. The jobs and unemployment report comes out at 7:30. Economists are forecasting 148,000 new jobs added last month, with the employment rate ticking up a tenth to 3.6%. Also today, wholesale inventories for December are due at about 9 o'clock this morning. Analysts are forecasting a tenth of a percent decline from December. Also on the calendar today, consumer credit numbers due out as well. So just a few things that could move the markets on Friday, February the 7th.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top six at six with Bob Saraz on WGN Radio.
We do this a little early on Fridays to make way for Lou Manfredini coming up shortly. It's 6:10 right now. Here we go with near final results showing Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg in the lead in Iowa's troubled caucuses. The seven presidential candidates are all set to debate. That's tonight in New Hampshire at 7 o'clock Central Time.
Now, page two.
The Chinese doctor who was reprimanded after warning in December about the then unidentified virus died of it today. Li Wenliang, a 34-year-old ophthalmologist in Wuhan, warned medical school classmates about evidence of a new virus in an online forum December 30th. The authorities later forced him to declare that he had spread an unfounded rumor.
Page three.
Red light cameras have gone from a bit part to major plot line in the sweeping federal investigations rocking Illinois politics. State Senator Mattie Hunter has now proposed a bill that would prohibit red light cameras, a source of money for many local governments, but a source of headaches for you and me and many motorists. Is there a chance that the red light cameras will go away even in Chicago? Steve, do you?
I think there's
you
a better,
have anything more on this?
I think there's a better chance of it, Bob, because it's all connected to Martin Sandoval, the lawmaker who resigned, and there's this investigation of red light cameras. They've tried a number of times before to do this, but there seems to be a groundswell of people saying, "Hey, wait a second, maybe these cameras were not intended for safety as they were talked about initially, and maybe it was just a cash cow that turned into coffers for the corrupt."
Yeah, don't you hate him? Don't you? Do you freak out like me when you see the sign "photo enforced"? And then you're thinking, okay, do I speed up here? Do I slow down? Do I jam on the brakes and get rear-ended? Yeah, it's a big
always.
Headache.
And the other thing too is you just never know when they're actually on and working, because sometimes they're not on. You'll see them flash a couple of times if somebody is speeding in front of you, but then or you know runs a red light, and then sometimes I've seen them not working. So you just never know if they're on.
You know, the dreaded flash. Yeah, I know.
Page 4.
CBS This Morning anchor Gayle King posted a two-part video on social media saying she was mortified and very angry at CBS for posting what she called a salacious clip of her interview with Lisa Leslie about Kobe Bryant. In the clip, King asked Leslie, a former WNBA star, about the legacy of Bryant given his sexual assault case in Colorado. The criminal complaint against him was dropped. Bryant reached an out-of-court settlement with his 19-year-old accuser and at the time issued a statement acknowledging that their sexual encounter may not have seemed consensual to her. That episode has proven a challenging aspect of remembering Bryant. And in the clip, Gayle King said, "It's been said that his legacy is complicated. Is it complicated for you as a woman, as a WNBA player?" And then Leslie said it was not, and said in all her dealings with Bryant, she never knew him to be the kind of person that would do something to violate a woman or be aggressive in that way. So because it was taken out of context, Gayle King did not like the fact that CBS posted that clip. King blamed CBS for releasing it. She felt it was incapable of showing the full scope of the interview in all of its nuance.
Stand by for news.
According to a new study in the journal Science, hot temperatures linked to global warming are contributing to the decline of bumblebees. Researchers found that bumblebee populations had recently dropped in North America and in Europe. The biggest declines were in areas with extreme temperature spikes. Who gets that job to count bumblebees?
To whom it may concern.
I don't know. And Warner Brothers is finalizing agreements with the cast of Friends for a reunion special that will likely be used to launch the new HBO Max streaming service this spring. I have to read the rest of this this item over music, I think. Yeah. Jennifer Aniston, Courtney Cox, Lisa Kudrow, David Schwimmer, Matt LeBlanc, Matthew Perry will receive between $2.25 million and $2.5 million for the show. A little bit of the Rembrandts and what became a big hit song, the theme from Friends.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sirott on WGN Radio.
Hello.
It's time to learn it all. You're on Lou's First Call.
Hello.
Lou's First Call is sponsored by Gilkey Windows, Chicago's only family-owned, direct-to-consumer window manufacturer.
It is 6:21. Let's say good morning to Mr. Fix-It. Hi, Lou.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, and we'll find out how people are doing with their dilemmas at home. If you've got a question for Mr. Fix-It, you've got something you're dealing with there around the house that you need assistance with, instructions, give us a call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Hey, Lou, I put together a lamp this week.
Congratulations.
Aren't you proud of me? Yeah.
I am proud of you, Bob. We've known each other a long time, and I know that that's a pretty good thing.
I learned what a harp was.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's that little sort of U-shaped thing that goes on the top of the whatever that the stem is called, and then under the bulb assembly.
When I was a young man, I was a remodeling contractor, and we did a remodeling job for a commercial business that's all they did was sell lamps. And I was intrigued by the fact that I was like, wow, how could somebody be in a business just doing this? And I picked the brain of the person working there, and I learned more about lamps I have actually forgotten more of what that gentleman taught me, but it was pretty interesting.
You're the hardware expert, so help me out here. It used to be real easy to buy a light bulb. Now there are too many to choose from. What's going on in that aisle?
Well, I mean, the advent of the LED bulb has really sort of taken over. You know, I probably spent the last 10 years trying to get people to go to CFLs, and then LEDs came on like crazy. And the big difference now is the fact that we no longer buy light bulbs by wattage, something that, you know, most of us grew up with. You know what a, hey, I need a 40-watt bulb or 60-watt bulb. And now the real kind of definer of bulbs are the lumens. And so that's the brightness of the bulb. The one thing is the manufacturers are pretty smart. Where on the back of the bulbs, if you stop and look at it, they do have a chart to give you sort of an equivalent of what's going on. But the thing is, when the LED bulbs first came out, they were very expensive, but they would last literally 30 years because of the diode inside of them. Now you can buy an LED bulb, Bob, for 99 cents. Now, that one's not going to last 30 years, but you're going to save a lot of money on your energy bills for lighting, the electricity used for lighting. Because, you know, what the equivalent of a 40-watt bulb was when, you know, more traditional incandescent bulbs, that probably uses about 9 watts of electricity. So it's a remarkably less energy use from an LED bulb.
See, I get confused, and when I hear you mention CFLs, I think you're talking about radio stations. What do I know?
Super CFL, I don't believe exists anymore.
Let's talk a little bit about what you should and shouldn't put on your sidewalk to melt the snow. Some of those compounds are harmful, correct?
It is. I mean, they're all, look, that the reality of it is not slipping and falling on some ice is the worst thing, so we want to put something down there. Rock salt, which is the least expensive, this is what most municipalities use on the back of their trucks, will work down to pretty much the lowest temperature. But that can be super corrosive to the concrete or the brick pavers that you may have on your driveway, even the asphalt. And it's also really hard on vegetation. And so many times people that just use that in the spring when we finally get through all this, they'll see that the grass is all burnt up and you spend all this money, you know, re-landscaping the area. The two products to use are calcium chloride and magnesium chloride. Magnesium chloride, a little bit harder to find, but that is a more gentler ice melt that will typically work down to 20 below. So that's pretty low. I mean, if it's colder than that, you shouldn't go outside. But and the other thing is not to go crazy using it. I see a lot of people that just go overboard with the amount that they put down. You really just need to lightly sprinkle this material. And then after a few applications, what you'll notice is there is a little residual value that retains itself on the surface, and you can actually use even less. And then once the spring rains come, it tends to wash that stuff away.
When my wife asks me to shovel, I just say, well, let's just wait till spring. It's better for the environment. Let nature do it.
Honey, I'm going to put that lamp together.
That's right. I'm busy with the lamp. Don't bother me. Lou, talk about the big show, the Old House, New House Home Show. What is that, and what's going on there in St. Charles?
So we're doing a live broadcast tomorrow morning from 7 to 10 a.m., and if you come out to the live broadcast, there's going to be refreshments, coffee and pastries and stuff. And also, anyone that comes to the live broadcast will get a free ticket to enter the home show on that day. The Old House, New House show has been around a long time, and it is one of the premier events in the area where I'm a big home show fan, so when you go there, you've got the opportunity to talk with, you know, 3 or 4 different window companies or, 4 or 5 different siding companies or HVAC companies, and really talk to them and see if you're comfortable with what they're telling you, and then you can have them to come out to do an estimate, whatever kind of work you may need. And it's been around a very long time, run by the Kennedy family. They do a really nice job, and I'm excited to be there. And then after I'm done with the broadcast, our friends at PermaSeal are going to have a booth there, and I'm going to be there from 10:30 to 11:30 if people want to stop by and say hi.
So we'll hear you on the radio tomorrow between 7 and 10.
The Old House, New House Home Show.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. It's Lou Manfredini, sponsored by Gilkey Windows, independently verified to be one of the country's most energy-efficient windows. Are you on the Today Show today?
I am not on the Today Show today, but every Friday I'm on WGN television doing a live spot. And today we're going to talk about there's been a lot of people with rodents under their homes and that are dying under their homes. I don't know what's going on there, but we're going to talk about how to keep them from coming under the porch and also how to eliminate the odor.
Okay, since we don't have televisions in our car, hopefully, at least not in the front seat.
No.
Give us one line on the solution.
Take a large, not a large, but take an LED work light. And in an area, if you've got a porch or something like that and you're worried about them, plug it in and keep it plugged in. Most of these animals are nocturnal, and a bright light in that area will discourage them from settling in.
And that's why he's Mr. Fix-It. Lou Manfredini, we'll be listening to you tomorrow morning, Lou.
Got it.
Have a good weekend.
Just the facts, if you don't mind, ma'am.
The story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
And Fridays, we visit with the author of a Beat Cop's Guide to Chicago Eats from your Jefferson Park Police Station, Lieutenant David Haynes. Good morning, Lieutenant. How you doing today?
Good morning. How are you?
Well, you know, we're good. And I must say that last week, those cupcakes you brought in, we did not have the willpower to avoid them. They were really awesome.
Yeah, Molly's cupcakes, they were really good. You know, I can I just mention, since I've started doing this, the biggest question I got is actually, you know, people ask me, you get to meet Dave Bennett? You know,
sure. Well, people want to know.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they ask, does his voice really sound like that when he's not talking? And I've been, you know, just messing with people saying, actually, when he's not on the radio, he has a very heavy English accent. So if you get pulled over on the Northwest side.
Yeah, you revealed the secret. Yeah. All right. What do you want to talk about first this morning?
Well, I brought in some more stuff today from Delightful Pastries at 5927 West Lawrence. And Delightful Pastries, they come out to a lot of these police events, and Dobra, the owner, makes these police cookies. They're called Blue Line Cookies, and they're decorated with...
what does it look like, a parking citation?
Well, this month, because of this month because of Valentine's Day, they've got a heart-shaped, and they've got the little blue line going across it.
That's cute.
And a lot of times they have the like a star on them, or sort of a Chicago flag. It's kind of blue and white. Looking cookies.
Did they give you guys cookies?
They don't give them. Well, they brought them to the event. That's why I first saw them. But they give them everything that they sell throughout the month. They give 50% of the proceeds to the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation.
Well, we like that.
Yeah, and so if it's at 5927 West Lawrence. They got a whole heart-shaped and Valentine's Day thing going on in the next couple of weeks. I also brought in, they make quiche. That's phenomenal, and some croissants and stuff like that. They it's a real, like a little neighborhood bakery. When I was in there getting stuff, the lady, everybody that walked in, she seemed to know their name.
I love places like that.
And switched from English to Polish like it was nothing, which is always fascinating to me, where she could talk to me in perfect English with no accent, and then switch over to Polish to the guy standing behind me.
Delightful Pastries, 5927 West Lawrence. That's the 16th Police District. Is that your district?
That is my district. Yes, yes. It's right there, Lawrence, just east of Austin. So it's also right near Earl's Barbecue. Is a great barbecue place right around the corner if you want to go over there, too.
You guys know all the good places. As I've mentioned before here, the thing we like about the Lieutenant's Restaurant reviews and recommendations, the police, they have to go to a place that has really good service because you only get like a half hour for lunch, right?
Right. We get a half an hour for lunch, so we have to be fast. You know, most of us are married with children, so it has to be fairly cheap.
Right. Uh-huh, and, of course. And good.
And good.
Yeah.
So we find the good little places where people won't bother us and they have great food.
And after a quick break, we'll talk about the place that you visited this past week. And the way you're doing this is you're getting recommendations from fellow officers, correct?
Right. Yeah. So I kind of put out a call. Let me know what restaurants in your district you eat at, because especially now that I'm getting older and I work on the Northwest side, I don't go to the South side really, unless I have to. So I asked for people to give me recommendations around the city so I could check out some different places.
Because, you're busy. You're working the all-night shift these days, aren't you?
Yeah, I work the night shift. So I tend to eat dinner at 5 o'clock in the morning. So, it's kind of hard to find an open restaurant.
Yeah. Well, we're ready for dinner here around 10 in the morning. We should meet up for dinner sometime. And are you in the station or are you out in a car?
No, I'm the field lieutenant. So you ask anybody on the police department, the best job in the department is field lieutenant in the 16th district, because it's a very nice place to work, and I get to go on whatever calls interest me, unless there's a request for a supervisor. I spend most of my night driving around the 16th district and the airport and stuff, so it's a lot of fun.
Do you pull into Super Dog every now and then?
I do. I try not to, though.
and the airport? You go to the airport?
Well, that's where we get gas. Overnight, there's no supervisors at the airport, so we approve their arrests and stuff like that, and that's where we get gas. So I get to drive out to the airport, which is always a lot of fun.
Do you chase people around when they're double parked there, dropping off somebody or picking up somebody?
That's the DOA police. We don't do that. That's the Department of Aviation. I do pull people over occasionally, which is apparently rare for lieutenant, because every time I get on the radio and say I'm doing it, everybody shows up thinking I'm in trouble. But if you break a traffic law right in front of me, I feel like you have to, as my duty, I have to at least stop you and make sure you're sober.
That's why we're paying your salary. That's right. Make sure you're not high.
I pulled somebody over last week, and they were really surprised to see a lieutenant pulling them over. And I'm like, listen, you just drove through a gas station with a police car sitting at the red light in front of you.
That's not a good thing. Where to eat? Forget about asking a truck driver or a fireman. You gotta check with a Chicago cop. Lieutenant, what restaurant did you review this week for us?
We looked at Monty's for Philly cheesesteaks. It was recommended by Officer Dino Dimas, who's an evidence technician up on the north side. And he got a superintendent's award of tactical excellence last year for talking somebody out of committing suicide. He's a good police officer, and he recommended Monty's for cheesesteaks in the 19th district. Tom Beat 1911, for those of you who are interested in that.
Evidence technician, I have a vision of him examining the sandwich with a magnifying glass.
If there's no hairs or anything like that in it, but it's at 4757 North Tallman, which is a really strange address to get to. It's just south of Lawrence, and Tallman's a side street. It's a one-way, and all the streets around there are one-way, so you have to kind of come on the next street over and then around the block if you want to park in front of the place. Or you can just park on Lawrence and walk.
You know what? I'm so glad you're reviewing this place, because I went there years ago. It was fantastic. And then I forgot about it. I forgot where it was. I forgot how to get there. Monty's on North Tallman.
Right. 4757 North Tallman. They are the kind of places that I always love, because they do weird stuff. I mean, this guy is very into Philadelphia, all things Philadelphia. So they play all the Eagles games during the football season are on. They have Philadelphia pennants. They even import their bread from Philadelphia every day. All their bread comes from Omarosa's Baking Company, which is 116 years old, and they have become synonymous with Philly cheesesteaks and hoagies and stuff like that. And they bring that in every day. It's not like they get bread from Toronto. It's a real...
Nothing against them.
Nothing against them. I love them. It's just a kind of thing where I love these people who own restaurants who think that you have to have something that specific to make what you do. And they use Angus ribeye steak. Their basic cheesesteak has grilled onions, and it's on an Omarosa roll, which is that baking company. And you can get cheese on it. My favorite is the Southside Johnny. Oh, I also love the names. Southside Johnny's. it's got mushrooms and horseradish sauce on it, too.
You know what? I order my Philly cheesesteak, and you're going to laugh at me, without cheese. I like onions and peppers, all the rest of the... and it still tastes good if you
actually
order it that
way.
A
lot of people order it that way. And by the way, they have gluten-free buns, too, for those of you who are my wife. They have... and they're very good. I tried the gluten-free bun, and it's very good, too. And they have one called the Rocky that has habaneros, jalapenos, and Serrano on it.
Okay, I think you've sold us on Monty's now. Tell us where that is again.
That's 4757 North Tallman, just south of Lawrence Avenue, up in right near Lawrence, California.
Do we know if they're open later? I was there for lunch.
Yeah, they're not. They close at 10 o'clock, and they're kind of a family place, too. Even though it's a bar, they have a full bar and everything. I was talking to Katie, the lady that was working there that night, and she said that they close at 10 o'clock, but they have a big neighborhood following. So they get most of their people are families that come in and eat.
So 10 p.m. Well, 10 p.m., that's not bad. Okay, we'll check that out. Monty's. Let's get to a little restaurant news. First, The Eater printed this list of top hamburgers in the area, and I'm not sure how they came to this rating, but here's the top three according to the Chicago Eater website. Number three, Little Bad Wolf in Andersonville. Don't know about that place, do you?
There.
Number two, I know about this place, Paradise Pup in Des Plaines.
Yeah, that's been there.
That's kind of a good hot dog joint, isn't it?
Yeah.
And number one, Edzo's Burger Shop in Evanston.
Yeah, that's because he's a Hawks fan of whoever wrote that story.
Yeah, good milkshakes at Edzo's, too.
What's the title of that?
Burgers Winning the Ground Game.
All right, I don't know. There's just so many great burger places in Chicago. Why do you have to go to the suburbs? Stay in the city.
Okay. Spoken like a good Chicago cop. And also wanted to mention this because next week, a week from today, Valentine's Day, and I saw some great tips from Open Table about Valentine's Day reservations. The most popular time for dinner reservations, 7 p.m. Grabbing a 6 or 9 p.m. spot allows for ample time to enjoy your meal and get into the hot spot you have your eye on. And then they say, forget the 20-course tasting menu. Upscale restaurants experience a huge spike in reservations for Valentine's Day. Opting for your favorite go-to spot is a great workaround, saving the tasting menu for another Friday night. I am not sure how your wife would like it, Lieutenant, if you said we're going to Monty's for Valentine's Day, but you might want to try it.
Yeah, she'd like it. You know, for all those amateur married people from a couple old pros like us, first of all, your little tips, you should have already made your reservations, just so you know. And if you're married, the 6 and 9 is great. You know, because it kind of works around it. If you're single, or if you're newly married and you go to a 6 or 9 reservation, your wife knows it means you forgot to make the reservation until you're too late. They're not dumb.
There's also a list from Open Table on the top restaurants for romantic dining. 12, they did a list, and 12 Illinois restaurants are among Open Table's 100 most romantic eateries in America. Here they are: ABBA, Boca, Cafe Babariba, Gibson's Italia, Girl and the Goat, Joe's Seafood, Prime Steak and Stone Crab, La Colonial, Maple and Ash, RL, RPM Italian, and RPM Steak, and Steak 48.
I just realized how successful I am in life that I've been to most of those restaurants.
Have you really?
At some point, yeah. Although I would not say Maple and Ash is a romantic place. I love Maple and Ash, and my son used to work there, but it's a loud restaurant.
Yeah, they're down here, 8 West Maple. Good place for steak and
fantastic
seafood, right?
Steak, yeah. And great for the bakery and pastry goods, just because to throw a shout out to my son and Aya.
You've been to all of those, really? Well, I haven't been to all of
those. Not the Girl and the Goat, but I've been to most of those that you read off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but out of those, I really like Boca. I like Boca and Gibson's. I love Gibson's.
Yeah, Boca over there in North Halsted. And, of course, well, this is the newer Gibson's, the Gibson's Italia on North Canal.
Oh, no, I haven't been there then. Gibson's Steak.
Yep, that's good. All right, any other restaurant notes? Anything else we need to get in here, Lieutenant?
Yeah, Cards Against Humanity. The Cards Against Humanity guys are opening up the Chicago Board Game Cafe. It's the most anticipated opening in my squad car, anyway.
Really?
I've been really looking forward to this. I think it's a fantastic idea. They've basically built the town square inside a building, and they were supposed to open in January, and at that point, I actually had an invitation to go to their pre-opening thing, but then they pushed it back, so I don't know if I'm going to get an invitation. But it's they're serving, they built a square, and they're serving like street food from Vietnam and Latin America, and it looks like such a fun concept. It's like a an adult theme park, sort of.
Chicago Board Game Cafe. Where is that?
It's at 1956 North. It's in the Margie's Candy Building on Western.
Oh, by Armitage there.
Yeah, 1965 North Milwaukee.
All right, there you have it. Some good recommendations and a nice restaurant review from our pal, Lieutenant David Haynes. The book, if you can still find it somewhere, is A Beat Cop's Guide to Chicago Eats.
And YouTube Beat Cop's Guide and Facebook Beat Cop's Guide. We're doing a live video podcast at 5 o'clock tonight. So.
And how do people hear your podcast?
Just go to Facebook or YouTube, look, search Beat Cop's Guide, and you'll find our channels.
All right, Lieutenant David Haynes, we'll see you next weekend.
All right, thanks. Nice to see you.
Happy Friday.
Hey, let's be careful out here.
Good morning. It's 10 after 7. A lot of people have travel on their minds already, planning for spring break. There's some other travel news we want to get to, and we have just the guy here to keep us posted on everything. I call him the travel expert. There are a few around, but this is the guy. You see him on CBS. You hear him now on WGN Radio on Saturday afternoons. Peter Greenberg. Welcome, Peter.
Hey, I'm the guy.
You're the guy. And I have to tell you, I listened to your radio show a couple weeks ago, and you set a bad precedent for those of us who are a longtime professional broadcasters, because here you are, a travel expert, and you're doing a radio show, and it's fantastic, and it's fun, and you know how to handle the callers, and I wish you wouldn't be that good. You know what I mean?
I'll take that. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Let's talk about one of the headlines in travel news today involving the Boeing 737. What should we be aware of here? What's going on now?
Well, what's going on now is going to continue to go on for the rest of this year, and that is anybody who thinks that this plane's going to be flying paying passengers before the end of the summer is a little bit delusional. What we're seeing here is the result of Boeing's arrogance, their sense of entitlement, and a cultural problem between the FAA and the people they're supposed to regulate. And if they don't fix that, we're going to have this problem again.
So now the plane is not going to fly for any time soon. Is it?
They're all grounded, and they've been grounded for more than a year coming up next month, really. And the reason for that is, it's not that the plane is now unsafe. They're going to fix this plane, and they're going to fix it. They're going to recertify it. Will I fly on it? You bet. That's not the issue. The issue is, how did we get to this point? And if we don't fix the fact that the regulator thinks that the people they're supposed to regulate are clients, mm-hmm. we got a problem.
Yeah, we sure do. How many miles do you log every year flying?
This is a scary one, about 450,000.
Okay, how do you stay healthy? What do you do when you get on a plane? What do you do to avoid the germs? And is the air really as bad as they say circulating on a plane?
Well, there are a couple things you need to do. And by the way, I don't often do them, so I'm not going to stand here and pontificate. But the bottom line is this. Anybody who thinks that they get on a plane that's been waiting for them for 8 days, like the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, is a little delusional. The bottom line is, they have about 38 minutes to turn a plane, which means when you get on the plane, you should bring some antiseptic wipes with you. Wipe off everything that's going to touch your skin. The tray table, the armrest, the seat backs, and the one thing people never remember, the air vent little nozzle above your head. That'll take you all of about 18 seconds. And then, if you're bold enough and physically capable enough of fitting inside an airplane lavatory, right? I mean, the only people who've been able to certify those lavatories is the cast of Cirque du Soleil. I mean, it's unbelievable. But if you can actually go in there and you're physically capable of washing both hands at the same time in that sink, do it thoroughly before and after you use the lavatory and before and after you eat on a plane, assuming there's even food on the plane.
You have to be a contortionist to keep the water running and wash both hands.
Literally. I mean, I challenge anybody listening to this show to get in a bathroom right now on a current airplane and turn around.
Yeah, forget it. That's a great tip about, I hadn't thought of that, the nozzle above you.
Yes.
Because that's like the remote control. Everybody's got their fingers on that.
The item with the most amount of bacteria on it in a hotel room is the remote control.
Yep. Absolutely. Right?
So short of wearing a hazmat suit every time you check in, just remember that. That's all.
We're talking travel with Peter Greenberg. You see him on CBS in the morning, in the evening. What do they call you? Do they call you like Mr. Travel? What do they do?
I'm just a travel editor.
You are.
I am.
A travel editor extraordinaire. Let's talk a little bit about the coronavirus. And you say there's a silver lining somewhere here. What is that?
Well, it may sound politically insensitive, but it is pragmatic in nature, and that's this. we know now that the Chinese outbound market is the largest in the world, and it has absolutely collapsed. The reason why the airlines canceled all their flights to China all the way through May isn't out of an abundance of caution for the disease. It's because nobody was on the planes. It was zero bookings. So it's not just about flights to China or flights from China to the U.S. It's where else were the Chinese traveling that they're also not traveling to now? Guess where that is? Everywhere.
Right.
So you're seeing a drop in airline load factors. You're seeing a drop in hotel occupancies around the world. So, for example, the round-trip airfare today, this morning, from Boston to London, what do you think it is?
I want to hope that it's less than $500.
You'll go to the Showcase Showdown. It's $255. You can't fly from Boston to New York for $255. You'll see this all over the world now because the Chinese aren't going to London, meaning those flights going to the United States are also, it's getting crazy. So you combine Brexit, an election year in this country, which means traditionally people don't fly as much. It happens every 4 years. There's nothing to do with who's running and who's not, right? It just happens, right? The power of the U.S. dollar overseas, which is strong, and the perception of the foreign governments and the foreigners themselves about the Trump administration's immigration policies, put all of those things together and now add the coronavirus, a perfect storm for smart travelers to benefit.
And this is going to go on for a while, isn't it?
Oh, it's going to go on for the rest of this year. The seasonality in travel right now is basically on hold because, remember, even if they resume the flights to China, that doesn't mean that all the Chinese are going to jump on planes immediately. There's a 3 to 4 month lag time. So you're talking August. So guess what? Buyer's market.
You know, I was talking to somebody who works for a cruise line the other day, and they mentioned, too, this business of it's an election year, so business is a little soft in some areas. I don't get that. Why is that?
Every 4 years, there's uncertainty. That's just the nature of the business, right? It's cyclical. So guess what? People go, well, I'll postpone travel till after the election, or I'll stay home a little longer this year. So you may see more domestic travel, a more drive-to travel, because gas prices haven't completely spiked. You'll see that this summer. But the real cool thing is international travel this summer will be less expensive than domestic travel.
So for spring break out of Chicago, there could be some good deals out there.
Oh, domestically, of course, but then again, overseas. You know, you want to go down to the Dominican Republic, right? That's now become like the number one destination for spring breakers, but they do it responsibly. You have all these all-inclusive hotels. So Punta Cana, Santo Domingo, that's one. Panama. Mm-hmm. I mean, take a look at about a 1,200 to 2,000-mile radius of where we are now. In the Caribbean, it's a deal.
And with all the bad publicity Mexico has received because of crime, what's happening to tourism there and what's happening to rates for hotels there?
Nothing's happened to it, and I'll tell you why. About 65,000 to 70,000 Mexicans have been killed in gang-related drug violence in the last 10 years. That's a terrible figure, and you can't avoid that. But that's representative of gangs shooting other gangs, gangs killing other gangs. What's the number one industry in Mexico right now?
I thought it was tourism.
You're right. It used to be oil. Oil's now number two. So guess what? They're still having a great year. By the way, not many Americans are vacationing in Nuevo Laredo or Ciudad Juarez, okay?
Yeah.
We're not really, like, talking about that. But if you're going to any of the great resort destinations in Mexico, there's no problema.
Got it.
Did you like my Spanish?
Yeah, very impressive.
Okay, good.
My wife's Cuban. I hope she's listening. U.S. News and World Report ranked the best hotels in the country based on an analysis of industry awards. They came out with this list the other day. Wondering what you think of the list and if you have been to these places. I guess Four Seasons Resort Lanai was at the top of the list. The Langham here in Chicago was on the list. Aquilina Sunny Isles, the Four Seasons in Disney World, Rancho Valencia out in California, the Four Seasons in Chicago. Yeah, what do you think?
All great, but let me tell you the metric I use to determine a great hotel, the bathroom. And I'll tell you why. You spend more waking hours in your hotel bathroom than any other room in the hotel. So if the bathroom works, the hotel is going to be great. Right?
Uh-huh.
So for everybody listening to the show, you know the problem. There's either not enough light in there,
mm-hmm.
or for my female friends, and I'm not being sexist, There's not enough space on that counter for all the stuff you carry with you. I'm sorry, there's just not. Search and rescue teams are still trying to figure out what you do in those bags. But the point is, I judge it from my female friends who tell me where they like the hotel bathrooms. And if they like the hotel bathrooms, that's where I'm staying.
And are all the hotels now going to these dispensers in the shower, and we're not getting any more of those fancy little bottles?
The dispensers in the shower make me remember my days in a dormitory at the University of Wisconsin.
That's not good.
No. I mean, it's a bad gym. I get it. People don't want to, single-use plastics. It's an issue. But, when I built my house in Los Angeles, I designed my bathroom as the best hotel bathroom I could come up with. So I put in special glass shelves only to hold the little bottles of shampoo.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
I collected them. Those days are over, my friend.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I still have like dozens and dozens of them. They come in handy.
They do.
But no more.
No, they're going to go. The straws, the swizzle sticks, and they should go.
It's Peter Greenberg with us, 7:25 right now. Talk about why you are in Chicago, other than to see us, of course.
Of course. Well, of course, I'm taping my radio show tomorrow, which operates right here on WGN. And then on Sunday, I'm speaking at the Travel and Adventure Show out in Rosemont.
And the show Peter refers to, Eye on Travel, is on this weekend between 3 and 5. Usually it's on 4 to 6. It depends on sports and so forth and so on. And it's a fun show, and people can call in with questions. And you have guests sometimes.
We have guests every time.
And do you know already what you've got going for tomorrow? Who's on the show?
I know basically some of what's on the show tomorrow. Because remember,
it's more than I know about this show, and I'm on here right now.
Travel is front page news. It is. So we always have to account for that because things could change overnight. Look, you had the terrible helicopter crash with Kobe Bryant. That is a travel story.
Yeah.
You have the Boeing 737 MAX. You have cruise ships being quarantined because of the coronavirus. All of that. That is related to travel.
Well, the best news of the day really is what you brought up in relation to the coronavirus. Like you say, the silver lining, the rates traveling out of the country from here.
It will be that way for the next 6 to 7 months.
And as you say, the perfect storm coupled with the election season and other factors that affect the travel business.
This is the time for smart travelers to jump and do it. But if you're going to make your reservations online, don't do it.
What do you mean?
Well, most people listening to the show make their reservations online.
Mm-hmm.
They're losers, and I'm going to tell you why. Because only 52% of the available inventory is online. The travel industry holds back. So if you're sitting there in your bathrobe at 2 o'clock in the morning being happy and lazy that you actually hit all those keystrokes, guess what? You've disenfranchised yourself from 48% that's out there. Pick up the phone, have a conversation with the travel provider. That doesn't mean you shouldn't go online to research. But be a comparison shopper. There's 48% that you haven't figured out yet, because what you're looking at on your screen is definitely not what they're looking at on their screen.
So should you call the airlines?
Absolutely. Listen, we have lost the art of the conversation in this country. Pick up the phone and have a conversation with the airlines, the hotels, the cruise lines. You'll learn something.
But they want you to go online, right? I mean, the airlines charge you more if they book it on the phone, don't they?
Yes, they do. But here's the deal. If I can prove to you that I can save you $600 every time you go on to a conversation on a phone, then I'm willing to pay $30 for that for that service. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. They want you to go online. Anytime an airline or an airport wants me to turn left, you know what I do? I turn right.
I like that thinking.
I disobey every airport sign. Are you hearing me, O'Hare? Every airport sign. Seriously. And I, by the way, I got here today, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Yeah. You're the best. Peter Greenberg, Eye on Travel on WGN Radio. You can hear him tomorrow afternoon here between 3 and 5. I hope you come back and chat with us again sometime here, Peter.
Anytime, sir.
Great to see you. Let's get our extremely local news report for today from Block Club Chicago and Seamus Toomey. Happy weekend, Seamus. How are you doing today?
I am happy it's Friday, Bob.
Yes, we are. Let's talk first about a place that I guess everyone in Hyde Park knows about this, right? Yeah, or they were familiar with it years ago. What's happening here?
Right, Tony Sports. Tony Sports was the place to go to get your sneakers, your gym shoes in the 80s and 90s. Tony Fernandez had locations all around the city, including on the north side on Sheridan Road.
Oh, he was up north, too,
He was up north, too. Actually, he opened in 85 on Sheridan, and ended up with 7 locations, 2 in Hyde Park, and was just, you know, it's hard to remember back then, but, you know, pre-internet, you know, you had to, you couldn't just order your shoes from Zappos or wherever.
That's right.
So, and, you know, he carried all the coolest brands. These were really trendsetters. This wasn't where I was shopping in 85. but, you know, these were the guys that had the brand new, you know, the brand new Jordans or whatever were buying them at Tony's. So he had quite a following. The business sort of ran his course. He retired to Florida. But sort of in celebration of the NBA All-Star Game coming to Chicago next week, Adidas has talked Tony out of retirement, brought him back up to Chicago. He's opening up a pop-up store in Hyde Park, a Tony Sports 2 weeks, you know, bask in the glory of the 80s and 90s.
Is he open already?
You know, it opens, today's the first day, it opens at 11 a.m. It's at 1658 East 53rd, and it sort of started organically. He started moving into this vacant shop that they rented out for the pop-up, and people saw the signs, and they're like, is that really Tony's coming back?
Really? Yeah, he had that much of a following. Huh?
He had that much of a following. Our Hyde Park reporter, Maxwell Evans, had actually spotted it and tried to figure out what was going on, and then he started tapping back into this sort of the old history of this spot, and it's going to come and go. Tony's going back to Florida after this, but
can't blame him.
It's going to be fun to, I think, for people to sort of feel some of the old styles and talk about the old shoes,
at least until February 16th. Now on to today's weed story and a bit of a controversy.
Right. This is, this is an interesting one to us. We were covering a meeting in the West Loop this week. And, you know, there's a million of these weed proposals. But this one got very interesting because one of the public commenters that came out, this is a proposed dispensary at Randolph and Sangamon in the West Loop. NewMed wants to open it there on the second floor above a barbershop. One of the first public commenters was the CEO of Haymarket Center, which is the 45-year-old drug rehab and alcohol rehab center right next door to this dispensary. And he said, hey, guys, come on. Like, isn't there a better location for you to open up a recreational weed dispensary than right next to a place that serves 500 people struggling with addiction?
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be places all over eventually, but I see their point about having that next door.
Right. It was just, you know, it wasn't even the optics of it. It was literally like, these people are going to have to exit right in front of all of our people that are out here. You know, couldn't we find somewhere else? Interestingly, Alderman Walter Burnett, who has serious sway in where this dispensary is going to end up in the West Loop, he never is afraid to speak his opinion or tip his hand on these sort of things. And Alderman Burnett said, hey, listen, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I get it. I don't think this is a great idea either. So it looks like NewMed may need to find a new spot.
And that spot, they're talking about 935 West Randolph. And finally, let's mention what's going on with a new park name in Chicago.
Right. Sometimes change needs a little push. This is Douglas Park in North Lawndale, named after Stephen Douglas, famous for the Lincoln-Douglas debates. For years now, a group of kids from North Lawndale, students from North Lawndale, have been circulating a petition trying to change the name of Douglas Park to Frederick Douglas Park. And they think it'd be far more inclusive of the neighborhood now to honor the former slave abolitionist, as opposed to Stephen Douglas, who famously argued that states should be able to decide for themselves if slaves are should be allowed. So it's really gone nowhere. The Park District has not done much on it, but lo and behold, someone with a very steady hand and a can of white paint went and just added an extra S to all of these signs. Frederick Douglass spells it with two S's, Stephen with one. So we noticed it one day driving by the park, and we're like, oh, look at that one sign. And then another sign. We realized every single sign in the park had been all of a sudden became Frederick Douglass Park. So the Park District sort of doesn't know anything about it.
They do now.
The neighbors knew all about it. And interestingly enough, someone pointed out on Reddit, that the if you go to Google Maps as well, that has been changed to Douglas with two S's as well. So enough people got behind it, told Google to change it, and they did. So
behold Douglas Park on the signs with two S's. There's your extremely local news for this morning, courtesy Block Club Chicago. Seamus Toomey, thanks as always, Seamus. Talk to you next week.
Have a nice weekend.
Let's talk a little bit about Valentine's Day, because it's a week from today, and also some weekend getaways at some good prices. Kelly Rizzo is here. Eat Travel Rock is her website. Series, and she is definitely a social media influencer, blogging at Eat Travel Rock. Kelly, good to see you. How you doing?
Good to see you, Bob. So happy to be back.
Well, it's nice to have you here talking about... Oh, by the way, you're on the cover of Splash Magazine. Congratulations
on
that.
Yeah, that was a fun little shoot. Normally, for a photo shoot, they don't whisk you away to Punta Cana with two of your girlfriends to do this amazing cover shoot where, you know, they put you in lots of neon and denim and ask you to pretend it's the 80s. So it was
really
pretty fun.
They couldn't do that on Michigan Avenue?
I don't think so. I think they really wanted that beach ambiance.
Wow. Somebody's
and they
got
weren't
little...
going to fake it at North Avenue Beach, so they took us to the Dominican Republic. It was great. So thank you, Splash.
I guess there's some extra money in the budget over there these days. All right. Right. Let's talk first about weekend getaways. You've got some suggestions, and these are economical, are they?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, once again, it all depends on what you're looking for. But what I love to do is to pick some of my favorite cities, and I actually have them all up on my Instagram in the highlights. And so I do a city guide for different cities, and I pick my, you know, favorite restaurants, favorite hotels, things to do. And, you know, it's just a really great way to take like a quickie trip. And, you know, it depends on where you are. So let's say you're out in California, you know, you can head to Palm Springs, you can head to Santa Barbara. If you're here in Chicago, you know, you can do a fun little road trip up to Milwaukee and hit up some really great new restaurants they've got up there. But all of these are on my website and on my Instagram. So, you know, you just kind of pick, let's say, where your initial destination is and how much time you want to spend, if it's just a weekend, if it's just a couple days, or even a little bit longer, and then you can really build out a full itinerary for one of those quick trips.
Tell us what your favorites are in the Midwest.
In the Midwest, you know, and this is a little bit more of a summer destination, but I love Milwaukee. In the summer, there is so much to do there, but even in the winter, they've got a lot of fun things too.
We all know about Summerfest, but
yes,
people don't think about it in the winter. You're right.
Summerfest, but those Summerfest grounds have much more going on than just Summerfest. Throughout the year, they have so many different festivals. They have like a great Oktoberfest that I went to this year, and they really make use of those grounds. But then obviously, you know, there's, I filmed last year at the Harley Davidson Museum up there, which is always a good time, and there's so much history there, whether you're a motorcycle lover or not. That's one of my favorite places.
Yeah,
to
I took
check
the tour there years ago,
yeah,
and then
cool?
I went over to a brewery, and we had a sample or two over there.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the itinerary, no matter what in Milwaukee. I guess as long as you're not riding the Harley at that moment.
So they still do the tours there at the brewery and at
Harley?
Yeah, well, Harley?
I mean, there's so many different breweries up there that you can really kind of pick and choose and do a whole. Make like a brewery crawl, I guess, if you want.
And if somebody wants to go to your Instagram, how do they find that?
That's just Eat Travel Rock, at Eat Travel Rock on Instagram. And what's nice is it's so easy to find all those city guides right up at the top. So it's for a lot of U.S. cities, but then some countries, too. Lots of international destinations.
Big date night here a week from tonight because of Valentine's Day. What do you recommend?
So, once again, it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for that typical cozy romantic date night, like the classic place that I've loved to go to for almost a decade now is Maud's Liquor Bar in the West Loop. Now that place, it feels so warm and cozy. It has like a French ambiance, and they have the best oysters, the most incredible, enticing craft cocktails, and they have it's also a great way to kind of get that Au Cheval burger without having to wait 5 hours in line at Au Cheval, because it's a very similar burger because it's the same owners. So it's a great way if you want to skip that line, you can head over to Maud's Liquor Bar. If you want something a little bit more sceney and kind of a little C&B scene, I'd check out RPM Seafood. So that just opened. That's right on the river. So it's going to be, you know, impress your date with some gorgeous views. But, you know, RPM, they really know how to do all their food.
They're experts, and so now
their new seafood spot's going to be amazing.
Yeah, you better get busy trying to get a reservation, too.
Yeah.
But when you said Au Cheval Burger at Maud's Liquor Bar, then I started paying attention.
Tell us
where Maud's is again.
So Maud's is on Randolph. So it's at, you know, on that restaurant row in Randolph. So that's right in the West Loop. RPM Seafood is right here in River North. And then if you want a couple immersive experiences, if you want to do something a little bit more, you know, off the beaten path, you can go to Momotaro and they do a sushi demonstration, and that is $175 per person. You learn how to make all their really high-end sushi, and then that's you know, a really great meal experience too with wine pairings. And then you can learn how to shuck on Valentine's Day at GT Fish and Oyster. And you can go down into their exclusive whale room, and the chefs will teach you how to shuck oysters and how to pair them. And then that is $75 per person.
Okay. Now that you're bringing up prices, let me tell you what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a place that has their regular menu at regular prices. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, then that's how I would go back to the, like, romantic, cozy Maud's Liquor Bar, because that's very reasonable.
Okay. Now, am I allowed to ask you about Mr. Kelly Rizzo?
Oh, my God. I don't know if he's ever been called that. Of course.
Bob Saget is who we're talking about.
You guys share a name?
And
Bob S.
One night on the Letterman show years ago, I forget the comedian who was a guest of Dave's, and I think it was the comic from San Francisco whose name escapes me now, but his name sounds like Bob Saget, Bob Surratt. And he actually mentioned me, and he mentioned your husband.
Oh, my gosh.
And when he came on and talked about Letterman. Yeah, right, exactly. What's he up to these days?
Oh, God, he is insanely busy. It's really hard to keep up with him. And, you know, being a comedian, they're usually the most neurotic and dark people, so they're all over the place, hard to pin down. But he's touring a ton. I think he'll be coming to Chicago pretty soon.
Oh, good.
So hopefully you'll get to chat with him.
Love to do that. I remember being I was commuting and spending a lot of time at CBS in New York back in the 80s when he first surfaced on the morning show there for CBS.
Yeah.
And all the talk in the building was, hey, did you see this guy? He's really funny. So yeah.
I guess they said he was a little too hot for morning TV
at the time. Yes,
and then he didn't last too long there, and then he got Full House, so it kind of worked out great.
And we're not allowed to talk about your dad, who I went to high school with. Forget about that. We don't need to talk about that.
Why not?
We don't have time for that.
Well, my dad says hi.
Oh, my best to him.
Oh, okay, good.
He was the kind of the tough guy greaser in high school.
He was. Mm-hmm. Good old Santo Rizzo, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. All right, it's Kelly Rizzo. Check out Eat, Travel, Rock, and we look forward to visiting with you from time to time here.
Oh, thanks. Bob.
Nice to see you. Good morning. A little old business here first. A guy was trying to think of the San Francisco comic Bob Sarlat. There you go. And it's 8:12. Hey, it's Dean Richards time. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning. Good morning. Speaking of Bob's,
mm-hmm.
This it sounds sad, but actually is celebratory. Tomorrow, February 8th, will be the 20th anniversary of the death of Bob Collins.
Yes, we did play a clip from what turned out to be Bob's last show earlier this morning,
yeah.
And it's amazing. Really, 20 years?
Yeah, it makes me sad to think that he's been gone that long. But I was playing my last conversation with him on the air this past Sunday on my Sunday radio show. And it made me sad, but it made me laugh, and it made me happy, and it made me, you know, feel good that I knew him and
mm-hmm.
that we had him. So mm-hmm. you know, for those of you that remember Bob Collins.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean. Just hearing his voice felt good, didn't it?
It did. And, you know, we played a little of his favorite song, Dead Skunk, in the middle of the road.
Of course.
So, you know, we tried to do it Bob style. The other Bob style.
Right. Before we get to a movie review and more from Dean Richards, best news of the day, as far as I'm concerned, Dean, people can now choose to disable autoplay on Netflix. I hate when the next episode, you know, it's a race to stop it before the next episode right. starts. Or worse yet, when you're browsing and it will automatically play a trailer. And Netflix apparently now has on their updated help page all the instructions on how you can disable that annoying feature.
How did they even have that on there in the first place? You know, it doesn't make any sense. I've had the same thing where, you know, I'm watching some episodes and it, you know, if I want to watch a couple, that's fine. It goes to the next one, although I think I could move it along a little faster if I were doing it myself. But when you want to stop and all of a sudden the TV is taken over and you know there's nothing you can do. I don't know how they didn't have this. I don't know why it was such a big deal to get a disabled feature put on this whole time.
I don't know, but I'm glad that you can now do
crazy that. You know what, this is not like when you had channels 2, 5, 7, and 9.
No, it's
life
not.
Life was easy.
That's right. Adjust the rabbit ears.
You get your kids to get up and change the channel.
Before we get to your movie review and other entertainment news, just quickly tell us about this reunion special with Friends.
Yeah, this has been rumored for a while now that this might happen. Some of the cast members said that they would like to do it. Some of them were not so committed. It's been going back and forth. They found a home for it. Friends reruns, I guess, now are on HBO. So HBO is going to be launching their new streaming service called HBO Max this coming May. And what a better way to do it than with a special like this that would bring all of the cast members together again. And yesterday it was reported that the entire cast has, quote, reached an agreement in principle. So that's more than we've heard to this date so far. And what it'll be is a one-hour reunion special. All the cast members will be back again. I don't know how they twisted their arms to do this, because they're practically making no money at all.
Oh, yeah.
Doing this. It's reported that they will earn, that each of the cast members will earn somewhere between $2 and $4 million for this project, for one project.
Wow.
How about that?
Back with Dean Richards, there's a movie opening this weekend called Birds of Prey. And Dean, I keep seeing different reviews for this, mentioning that it's a visual feast, but that it's a bit predictable and sort of not much of a plot. What did you think of this?
In a word, stupid.
That sums it up.
Those other fancy reviews that have all the rest. The full title of this movie is Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. It stars Margot Robbie. She created this character for the Suicide Squad movie that came out a couple of years ago. She was the girlfriend to the Joker in that movie, and now they've spun this character off. And talk about a movie that just did not need to be made. There wasn't that much interesting, really, in the character in the first place in the Suicide Squad. But now it focuses on this one character who is still obsessed with being in love with the Joker. They break up. She runs around Gotham City from one senseless scenario and one senseless character to another. It's really not until about three quarters of the way into this movie that it becomes a little bit interesting, and at least you can kind of understand what the point is when it becomes sort of this girl power revenge adventure where they're trying to get back at a crime boss in the movie. But so many of the things just simply don't make sense. I mean, you're watching the movie and go, well, how did that happen? How did they get from that to that? Like, it's stupid. A lot of it is just stupid. You know, sometimes I don't mind a movie that's mind candy. This one is extremely light mind candy. I wound up giving it a Dean's List D. I would, especially on, there's no coincidence that they're opening this on Oscar weekend, the weekend where people, you know, like to go to the movies, catch up on the Oscar-nominated films that they haven't seen yet. January is usually the dumping ground for new movies that even studios acknowledge are not very good. And that I think that's the case for this one. It's colorful. I'll give you that much. It is colorful. I need a little more than a Crayola box to please me when I go to the movies.
Well, it's a little different take on it than one critic who gave it 3.5 stars. We won't mention his name. His initials are Richard Roper, though, so they want to talk to him.
Something for everyone.
Yeah, very subjective. Something well, hopefully Bruno Mars will do better in the movies. What's up with him?
Yeah, you know what? I'm actually kind of shocked that this has not happened before. And I guess I didn't even realize it until the story came out this morning that Bruno Mars just signed a big-dollar movie deal with the Disney company. He will star in and also produce a music-oriented feature film. They haven't given any details. They haven't given any dates on it yet. But just, you know, the fact that Bruno Mars is going to be attached to a big length motion picture. His videos are great. He's, you know, so visual. I can't imagine that he wouldn't be great in a feature film. But he tweeted out this morning, Mars meets the mouse. And he's, you know, super happy to be a part of this haul.
And finally, let's get the Dean's List of things to do over the weekend. What do you like?
Well, let's see. You know, the auto show opens in Chicago officially tomorrow, I guess. They have their big charity event tonight. But, you know, that's going to be one of the most attended things for the next couple of weeks over at McCormick Place. I'm not really looking, you know, at new cars at all, but I love to go to the auto show. It's kind of tradition. I guess, you know, we've always gone, even when we were little kids. But the reason that I go now is to get my glasses cleaned, you know, at those booths where there's the guy with the bad microphone, and he puts your glasses over some steam. And then he cleans your glasses and puts your glasses over the steam again, and they don't fog up.
That's worth the trip and worth the admission.
Yeah, that's I don't know what the ticket price is, but whatever it is, it's worth it to get my glasses cleaned. River Dance is back in Chicago for this weekend. I was always a fan of the show. I always liked River Dance even more than many of the other step dance shows that have come along. Believe it or not, it's celebrating its 25th anniversary. It's at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Through Sunday. Over at the Steppenwolf, Tracy Letts has a new drama that's called Bug that's opening right now. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't tell you too much about it, but having Tracy Letts' name attached to it tells me that it's great, and it's already been extended through March the 15th. Chris Tucker is in town this weekend, hilarious comedian, Chicago Theater tomorrow night. Carlos Mencia is out at the Improv in Schaumburg all weekend long. Music, we've got Smokey Robinson at the Chicago Theater tonight. We've got Richard Marx at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles on Sunday. Bob, I know you like to hang with the rappers.
Of course.
A rapper by the name of Trippy Red.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just hearing my dad's voice in my head right now. What?
Don't turn into your father, Dean. Come on.
Trippy, what did he just say? What? Riviera tomorrow, and this great bluegrass band that's called the Infamous String Dusters. They're going to be at the Vic tonight as well.
I would go see Trippy Red, but I'm hanging with Insane Coho Lips tonight.
Very nice.
No, it's Insane Clown Posse. That's what it is. Yeah. Sorry.
Both bands before their time.
Listen, if tickets are still available for Smokey Robinson of the Chicago Theater, that should be on everybody's bucket list. Yep. I remember seeing him, I think, at Ravinia last time around. He's the best, isn't he?
He is. It was just on the Grammy Awards or one of the big award shows. I think it was the Grammys, and he performed, and his voice is still amazing.
Yeah, it is.
He looks great. He sounds great. He is 79 years old, and you would never know it in a million years. He's so full of energy and life and breathes life into those great Motown songs. So Chicago Theater, what did I say, tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tonight.
That's music history. Well, you have yourself a good weekend, Dean.
Oscars are Sunday, by the way.
Yes.
And we've got a full list of predictions are up at WGNTV.com/Dean's List. We've also put a printable ballot on there. A lot of people like to print those up for their Oscar parties. So you can see everything that's nominated on one sheet of paper. It's all WGNTV.com/Dean's List.
And do I have this right? ABC has the red carpet starting at like 4:30, and then the actual ceremony at 7?
Yeah, the red carpet, 4:30 today it starts.
Thanks, Dean.
It's a long red carpet, very, very long red carpet.
We'll talk to you Monday.
Bye.
Greg Kot, known around the country for his concert reviews and books, is leaving the Chicago Tribune after 40 years, including the last 30 as music critic. We thought it would be good to check in with Greg this morning on his last day. Hi, Greg. How you doing?
All right, Bob. Wow, it sounds like I almost died or something there.
No.
Like my obituary's been written. No, but it's true. It is my last day, and 40 years at the Trib, 30 as a music critic. The finality of it is kind of hitting me a little bit. So yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's got to be a bittersweet day for you today, right?
Sure. I loved working at the Trib, and it was basically my entire adult life, and I always wanted to be a newspaper guy, at least since I was about 12 years old. Went to journalism school. Getting a job at the Chicago Tribune was pretty much a dream come true. You know, my favorite paper in my city, and so it was just... it was exactly what I wanted to do. You wake up every day thinking this is exactly where I want to be and what I want to do. And, you know, having the opportunity to do that for my career is quite something. But, you know, I just felt it was, you know, I wanted to do this job 100% to my abilities all the time. And, you know, I've had, my parents are getting older. My mom died a few years ago. My dad is still around, but, you know, he needs my, I'm kind of a caretaker for my dad in a lot of ways. And, you know, I wanted to spend more time with him. And I've got a couple other things that I'm doing as well, a radio show and a basketball program. So it's not like I'm going to be sitting on the couch. But I did have other priorities that sort of came my way that I had to attend to. And I felt if I couldn't give the Trib job 100%, you know, this was the time to go. And with the buyout offer, you know, the writing was on the wall, so to speak.
Well, I certainly wasn't the only TV and radio guy who tapped into your expertise, referred to your columns, and enjoyed reading you over the years. So many great concert reviews. Was the biggest change in your time doing this, Greg, the ticket prices and the whole concert business?
Well, the concert business is a huge part of it. Obviously, you know, when the Eagles busted the $100 ticket barrier in the 94, I wrote about it and got a nasty phone call from Don Henley about it, you know, in return. But, you know, I just thought it was ridiculous that anybody would charge that amount of money for a show. Since then, it's become routine. But I think an even bigger issue has been the effect that the Internet has had on the way music is made and distributed, and how that's completely turned the economic structure of the music business upside down. Not necessarily for the worst. I think the music industry was incredibly corrupt and needed a shake-up. Artists were never getting paid, really. They were always the last ones to get paid. And that has continued with the Internet. But at least the artists have a more direct pipeline to the fans, getting the music directly to the fans instead of using the middleman. I think the way things have shaken out in the last 20 years, it isn't become quite as idyllic as I hoped it would be. But it is a huge, huge change. And I think, you know, historic change. And, you know, I was able to cover that on my beat, wrote a book about it. I think that's going to have an impact over the next 100 years, the way music is made and distributed. So I think that was probably the single most important thing that happened on my beat in the time that I was working it.
Fascinating book. Greg refers to Ripped, How the Wired Generation Revolutionized Music. It's really a great story, and I talked to a lot of artists, and in many ways the playing field is more even and open to new artists, I guess. And as far as the consumers go, I guess it's better for us too, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a win-win on a lot of levels. More artists than ever can record in a way that befits their budgets instead of having to go to a record label to give them a loan to record in an expensive studio. Artists don't have to record music that way anymore. I think fans have a more direct line to their artists this way. Band to fan is exactly the way it should be done if it can be done in an ideal situation. It's opened up the playing field to so many new artists. A lot of people say, oh, it's not like it was in the 60s. And I go, my response to that is, thank God. I mean, you know, it was tough. By the time we got out of the 60s and into the 70s, it was really tough for any new artist to get a record deal and get noticed. And, the whole idea of developing artists went out the window by the time we were in the 90s. Any artist, anybody who has music in them can make a record. And, of course, there are more records than ever, which causes problems about how do you get noticed. Mm-hmm. But, those issues will be overcome. They'll eventually be overcome. I think the real winners, though, have been the fans. The ability to access just about any piece of music that's ever been recorded is just a remarkable thing. I just remember going on record hunts for specific records that I'd read about and, you know, taking 6 months to a year to finding it, and it was like finding the Holy Grail. And now you can, you know, punch it up on your keyboard or your cell phone in a matter of seconds. That's just an incredible change. And the fact that my kids grew up in a generation where they could, you know, they knew who Billie Holiday was when they were like 9 years old because they had instant access to that stuff. They heard me mention her once, and mm-hmm. next thing you know, they're calling it up, you know.
Right.
When I was 9 years old, I wouldn't have even known how to find that music, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a great change.
Yeah, but the smell of the record store was really great. It's Greg Kot. And Greg, on behalf of zillions of music fans around here, thanks so much for the great work over the years. And good luck with that business, Over the Edge. It helps prepare boys and girls to play competitive basketball. And you're going to continue the NPR show, right?
Yeah, I'm still doing Sound Opinions on public radio. We're on more than 100 stations around the country. Our podcast is doing great numbers, and so I'll still be neck deep in music, Bob. I'm very happy to say that. Music is always going to be a part of my life, and talking and writing about it will be always a part of my life. So
we're all glad that you're going to be part of our life going forward.
Well, thanks, Bob. I appreciate that very much. Thank you for having me on.
All the best. It's Greg Kot, one of the best. Time for a little Blackhawks talk. And good morning, Coach Jeremy Colleton. Hi, Jeremy.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good. Before I turn things over to Dave Bennett, I wanted to ask you something. I actually thought about this during the Super Bowl when they showed some old clips of head coach Hank Stram with a suit and tie on the sidelines. And you're nattily dressed all the time, Jeremy. Does the league make you wear a suit and tie? Wouldn't you like to just, go more casual? Wouldn't that be more comfortable for you?
I'm not sure what the rules are, but I think it's just custom. But I don't know if there is actually a rule or not, what you're allowed to wear on the bench. But there's something to be said for tradition.
Well, you always look like one of the best-dressed people around. So
you're kind.
There is that. And let's go to the sports questioning now. Dave?
Well, remember when Connie Mack used to manage, he would manage in a suit in baseball. So
yeah.
Traditions do change sometimes.
Yes, they do.
Jeremy, next five on the road starting, and it's kind of an odd road trip where you get back-to-back Sundays playing in Winnipeg with three other games in between, but they're all against teams that are in the playoff picture in the West. So does this kind of ratchet up the importance of this trip, facing teams that you're battling for playoff position?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. All five games are going to be huge ramifications for where we're going to fit in, and certainly we can set ourselves up with a really good trip. But we got some confidence in our game, and even when I thought the last two games we haven't played our best, we found a way to get points. We got some great goaltending, scored at key times. Not a lot of offense, but we found a way to keep the puck out of our net, and we scored key goals to allow ourselves to get points. And now it's an important week coming up.
Points in 12 of your last 16 games, I believe, five straight on the road. Obviously a tough one the other night, though. You did get the point. But when you get a tough call go against you like the one on Wednesday, how do you keep it from lingering with your guys?
Yeah, well, I think we got to, as a staff, set a tone that we're moving on. And that's where we get help from the leadership group, obviously. They've been around. They know we got to deal with what's important now. And what's important now is preparing for the trip and preparing for a really big game Sunday. We got 2 days of practice here to work on some habits and make sure our game's in a great spot to do that preparation. I'm not feel pretty good that we're going to be ready to compete on game day. But right now, it's all the focus is on preparing.
Your goaltending has been terrific all year, but it almost seems lately like it's even gone up a notch. And maybe did it take you some time to kind of develop a feel when you're playing two high-level goaltenders, as you have been, to kind of get a feel for when to play, when to give a guy a night off, when to play the other guy in back-to-back games, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we've been working on it all year. I think we, from the beginning, decided that those back-to-backs, we're going to split all of them. And I think that's worked for us, even when one guy's playing well and kind of not, shutting the door on the other guy. That back-to-back situation has allowed us to get that guy a game, and then often we get a response and really good play. And so that's been really good, and we're going to need it. The goaltending has been a huge part of the success we have had, and we're going to need it to continue.
Coach, what's the latest on the injury report?
Nothing really. I mean, Boqvist is day-to-day. We'll see how he is today. Obviously, yesterday was off, but other than that, no change. So I think overall we're relatively healthy, which is that's nice. And all teams deal with some sort of injuries, so we'll be no different.
When you get a night off like last night, and the teams that you're battling are playing, are you constantly watching the scoreboard? You had a couple of teams that jumped ahead of you last night in the standings, or is that at this point, it's everything's going to change night to night, so you can't get too caught up in it?
Yeah, definitely. You can't get caught up in it. Ultimately, we got to win our games. It's not to say you don't watch a couple. So, I watched a couple of the games. Just first of all, we're playing Winnipeg, so you look at that game, and then also any of the games that are interesting as far as the scores, and of course we look at the standings. But as you said, it can't get too high or too low based on the results. The help we're going to get is from ourselves getting points.
Blackhawks coach Jeremy Colliton, thanks for the time this morning, Jeremy. Hope you guys have a great weekend.
Thanks a lot. Take care, guys.
Travel safe.
And Dave Ennett, did I hear this right? Your broadcast partner, Pat Fitzgerald. What's this about?
Well, so Joey Meyer, who normally does the Northwestern basketball games with me, had some hip surgery this week. He's doing fine, but he's going to miss a few games here. So they kind of cast a net out there for a fill-in, and guess who raised his hand and said, how about me? And so Pat Fitzgerald, the football coach at Northwestern, is going to sit in with me on the basketball game on Wednesday night against Michigan at Wells Fargo Arena.
And are you giving classes? Will you be going over to his house, tutoring him?
No, I think he's already working. He's doing his prep work. He's, he's got that coach's mentality where you watch tape and you always got to be ready and consider different situations. We were texting last night. He says, I'm not going to go in there unprepared. So he'll be ready.
Is there any chance he's going to give you the elbow and
I'm
start doing some play-by-play?
I'm a little bit concerned about how he might react. And, he was a physical football player and football is a physical, but so is basketball.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see if there's a questionable call, how he reacts. Because you know, we can almost reach out and touch the officials. They're right there.
Yeah, you're close. Yes. So that's Wednesday night?
Wednesday night, yes. So okay. The Wildcats and the Wolverines.
Well, I'm glad you called him. I can fake my way through baseball, but football, hockey, basketball, I can't even try. So we'll be listening to that.
Go Cats.
It's our last train home music. We're going to make way for the news, and then John Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Surratt. We're going to ask our listeners today to tell us what's the movie you want your kids to watch. We were talking about Spartacus yesterday, and somebody texted in and said they made their kids watch 12 Angry Men. We went down movie row, but they said they made their kids watch 12 Angry Men before they registered to vote. It got me to thinking, what movie do you really want your kid to see? It's on my Facebook page, and we'll start the show with a little bit of that.
Well, good luck having your child sit through a long black and white film. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Monday. Have yourself a terrific weekend.